Kempire is brought to you by
Philadelphia, the Kempire After Dark, the villain era, is coming to your city on July 10th. That is 2 weeks away. But this week only, until Sunday, there is a flash sale for premium tickets for $25 only. Don't miss our night of hot topics. We have a lot to talk about, from Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of Miami, to The Diddler, and so much more. Don't forget, we are also coming to the City Winery in Atlanta on August 5th, and then we're in Union Stage on August 22nd in Washington, D.C. Then we're back in New York City at the Green Room 42. That show has not just the meet and greet, but we also have a live stream option. So even if you're attending these other shows or you're not in any of the cities, you have an option to be a part of the Kempire After Dark, the villain era live experience right now. Get your tickets today. More information is available in the description. But again, Philly, go get your tickets this week. Flash sale happening right now.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
It's day 32 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial, and we have some updates from yesterday because the prosecution had their closing arguments. They also get a rebuttal argument, which I see is playing out today. So we might have the jury deliberating come Monday. Some experts are saying possibly Tuesday. We're going to unpack that. We have a message from Kirsten Brown, the prosecutor that we had here on the channel. We've been conversing back and forth in regards to what has been playing out in these last few days, because there's a lot of confusion, especially when we get to the legal procedures of it all when it comes to a federal case. Very much like you, I've become educated on a lot of different things. And even with all of the information that we've gathered, there's still some confusion as to what's happening and how the jury will come to their verdict. We're going to unpack some of that. And of course, we will be talking about day 32. The defense has their closing arguments today. How did they do? Well, we have your summary for you. And based off the summary, based off what the people inside the court, I have some updates and some reactions as well. Let's get into day 32 of the Diddy trial, exclusively here on the Kempire channel. You can also hear our Diddy trial updates along with extended versions and other exclusive content on the Kempire podcast. Subscribe today and become a Club Kempire member. That is our paid Apple subscription, where I will share more details, tea, extended versions. It really is a kitchen table talk. Whatever you want to call it, it's an opportunity for you to hear extra content there, along with my White Lotus recaps, The Handmaid's Tale, I talk about And Just Like That, which I have not watched yet, so stay tuned. Okay. All right, let's get into day 32. But before we get into day 32, I want to talk a little bit about day 31. One of the things that I asked myself yesterday was whether or not the entire family was there. According to journalists, Mona Abdi, who's been inside the court, and homegirl has been going there super early just so that she could be inside the court, she revealed that his daughters were there yesterday. Because remember I said to you, I didn't see any footage of the daughters going in and out, but it could have been I just missed it. Normally, I get to see when the family has been showing up. What she noted was, first of all, Diddy had a lot of the family, all of his kids were there. His mother has been there on the daily. She noted that Justin has really been there. Of the brothers have been going consistently, but she says that Justin has been the most consistent showing up in court. Not every single day, but definitely every single week he is there. Okay, I feel like he's there every single day, but all these days have come together. The other thing that we talked about yesterday was the fact that they were reporting that Diddy's energy was a little different yesterday. Remember, we talked about that and how they said that he seemed a little, they didn't say distraught. I can't remember the word that they said or used yesterday. Just go back to the video we did yesterday. And I said, well, that's one's perception. But when multiple journalists, including Mona, saying that, yeah, his energy was very different. She's been in the court every single day. So she's seen his energy. She's seen how involved he was in the case. She said yesterday, Diddy's energy was very different. He was very far from the table. He was looking at the jury a lot. Even though he's been accused of looking at the jury, remember they had to admonish him, the court, the judge admonished him via his attorneys about interacting with the jury. He's not allowed to do that. And everyone has been reporting that his energy yesterday was very different than what it's been. Some speculate that maybe it's starting to come to realization that the life that he's created for himself, from nothing to a billionaire to now not a billionaire and now an inmate at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. It has to be something in your brain, like, what if they come back and they say that I'm guilty? What if? Well, it'll be interesting to see what his energy is like today, but that was his energy yesterday. So apparently his daughters were there. Apparently, according to Mona, she says, for the most part, because they've interacted with the family while there, because, you know, the kids, although the children of a billionaire, are going to the court's cafeteria. They're sitting there having, she says, it's such a different experience. It's sort of like, wow, what is happening here? But it's interesting to see their energy. She says, for the most part, they seem to be upbeat. I don't know if this is the PR strategist informing them this is how you should conduct yourself in court, or maybe their father is saying, no, everything's going to be fine, and these are the reasons why. I don't know. However, what I do want to see is what will be the final verdict here. That is the question. We are coming down to the end. Shout out to those of you that have been following us since the beginning, or maybe you're new here. Let me know in the live chat if you are new here. This has been an incredible journey of learning more about this federal case, learning about the law. Shout out to Kirsten Brown for being here. And really, I feel like, and I don't know if you guys, I keep telling you to go back and watch those two videos that I did with Kirsten. We were looking for legal experts to come here on the channel. It was really great to get a prosecutor's viewpoint from this, and because it really does make you look at the case differently. And I get it. A lot of us are laymen looking at this case, and based on what we know so far, it does feel like, oh, could he walk? Oh, did they prove their case? Oh, and you remember this past week, there was a whole speculation. Oh, Diddy dropped, but they dropped the charges against Diddy. And that was completely not true. According to the prosecution and what media had been reporting afterwards was that, no, they had pulled some of the allegations. The charges still remain. There are certain allegations. And according to the prosecution, they're doing that to streamline this. And to, I would say, make it easier for the jury to come to a verdict. We did a video this week reading to you some of the suggestions that the prosecution had for the jury instructions. So Kirsten Brown, who has been here on the channel, she's a Los Angeles prosecutor as well. She highlighted something that we read yesterday that I didn't even think about. And you remember, I had a problem even saying the word unanimity. And she screenshot that part to me, and she said this is important. So let me read exactly her text message to me in regards to this, because she says this particular part that we read when we were going through the prosecution suggestions for the jury instructions under unanimity, she says is important. So let me just read for you part of what she sent me in the text message. I've been getting up to speed and found that no one was reporting about the specific instructions except you. Well, because we read through all of them. She says, I found the answer to an important question I had in the document you sent me. She says, if this instruction was included, that's if, because remember, this, what I read to you guys were the proposed jury instructions. So it's important to know. This is not saying, because we have not seen the final instructions that will be given to the jury. But she says, if this instruction was included, and this was under unanimity, go back to the video that we did yesterday. Okay, I'll just read it to you again. So to remind you, because I know some of you are like, I don't want to go back. It's okay. I understand. You're lazy. I'm playing. No, I think it's just easier for us to do it. So let me just read to you this particular portion that the prosecution wanted included in the jury instructions. They said, the government objects to the unanimity instructions for the S trafficking and Mann Act offenses. The government has been unable to find a single first S trafficking and Mann Act case where an unanimity instruction was given, and are concerned that the language as drafted will introduce error into the charge. Accordingly, the government proposes the following language, which is designed to reduce the risk of error and confusion. They want to make it easy for the jury because it's already going to be a difficult task. It's already a very specific case. I told you Sunny Hostin, who's a former prosecutor, said that she has never seen a case like this either. The intent of these edits, among other things, is to properly characterize what constitutes the relevant instance and to make clear that unanimity is only needed for elements, not means. So this is what Kirsten is going to be explaining to us. And then they cite case law here, all right? Affirming an instruction to the jury to convict. It did not need to conclude unanimously as to how Corley violated, and then they cite the different citation there, specifically whether he either harbored, participated in a venture that harbored minor victims, because harboring and participating in ventures to harbor are alternative means of committing the offense. I understand a lot of you are like, I don't understand. We're going to get there. So they say that holding that the 10 different acts in which a person may engage to commit the offense of sex trafficking of a minor, in particular, recruits, entices, harbors, transports, provides, obtains, advertises, maintains, patronizes, or solicits by any means, are means, not elements. Pay attention, follow me, because this is going to be important. And then they highlight the counts 2 and 4 proposed instruction, and then counts 3 and 4 proposed instruction. But let me just remind you or read to you what Kirsten says here. She says, if this instruction was included, because remember, these were proposed. I have not seen the final instructions for the jury yet. She says, if this instruction was included, it's huge for the prosecution. This is what Kirsten meant in the last video that we did. She said there are certain things in this case or that's not being reported on. Remember, Kirsten said there aren't a lot of people that are talking about this case are even mentioning this particular instruction. Because if it is included, it could be critical to the prosecution's case. So this is why people will end up, if depending on the verdict, will be like, I don't understand how they got there. They did not prove it. Free Diddy, blah, blah, blah. This is why jury selection is important and jury instructions are important. So I'm going to read this again to you. If this instruction was included, this is from Kirsten. If this instruction was included, it's huge for the prosecution. In short, it means the jurors have to unanimously agree that there was a racketeering conspiracy, but they do not have to agree on the predicates. That's important. Each juror can have their own opinion about what 2 or more acts they're considering. This is so much easier than having to get all 12 jurors to agree on the predicates, a very tall order. I think we touched on this in one of our convos. We did, Kirsten. We definitely talked about this. Most reporting is that the prosecution argument was very good, albeit boring. Yeah. It was also almost 5 hours of closing arguments. She says, without having heard defense arguments, this is today, she sent me this last night, my gut tells me split verdict. For example, convicting on the Cassie count, but acquitting on the Jane count. Remember the pseudonym that was used for victim number 4? On the Jane count. She says, I think defense will argue witnesses slash victims aren't credible. But if you do believe them, there was consent. But if you don't believe them, there was consent. Diddy did not violate federal law. Curious if they concede S trafficking as a strategy, then go all in on the RICO counts. She says, last point for now, very interesting, the prosecution framed the Intercontinental Hotel beating as S trafficking since Cassie was trying to leave a freak off, but was forced to go back. Remember, we talked about that. That's why it's important to go back and listen to when we read through the prosecution's possible jury instructions. Again, these were proposed jury instructions that we were reading. So she says, last point for now, very interesting, the prosecution framed the Intercontinental Hotel beating as a S trafficking since Cassie was trying to leave a freak off, but was forced to go back. She said, that's a great use of powerful evidence. Something for us to consider as we get into day 32 and the defense's closing arguments. Again, we're going to bring Kirsten back. I'm going to figure out a day very soon so we can bring her back because there's a lot developing and I think we need her expertise. But speaking of experts, as you know, here on our channel, we always are citing our sources. I want to get into what our friends over at Law and Crime. Be sure to subscribe to the channel. I will also post the video in the description so that you guys can go watch the video. Sometimes you want to hear something again, and I will be stopping and going because I will have reactions. But I shout out to them because they had a few different lawyers from different backgrounds. Some are defense lawyers, trial attorneys, and things like that. It's interesting to hear their perspectives on today's closing arguments from the defense. But before we get to that reminder, don't forget to like today's video. And if you're listening to this, don't forget to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Don't forget on Spotify, you can also engage with us in their comment options. I've been loving engaging with you guys in the comments on Spotify. Our Spotify community is growing. Also, The Kempire After Dark, The Villain Era is coming to a city near you. We'll be in Philadelphia on July 10th. That's less than 2 weeks away now. There's a summer sale this week. It ends on Sunday. Spread the word. If you already got your tickets and you know someone else that wants to come, and you don't have to be in Philly to come to the show. Literally, there are people coming in from different parts of the country. But if you're in South Jersey, if you're in New York, and you can't make the New York City show, why not come to Philly? Make it a weekend. Just saying. But there's a summer sale this week only for City Winery in Philadelphia. Go get your tickets today if you want. And there's also meet and greet tickets available. Then we're coming to Atlanta on August 5th. Then we're back in D.C. on August 22nd. Then here in New York City on September 12th. It's a night of hot topics. We will definitely, this Philadelphia show, be talking about Real Housewives of Miami. I got something for you, Julia. We'll be talking about the Diddler because by then we probably will have a, not probably, we will have a verdict by then in regards to it. So we will definitely be talking about that. We got to talk about Tyler Perry. There's so much, but who knows? Every show is so different because it depends on what's happening at that time. So what we talk about in Atlanta or Philly or DC won't be what we talk about come September here in New York City. New York City has a live stream option. So even if you're coming to any of the shows, or maybe you're not, and I'm not coming to your city or your country, this is your opportunity to experience the Kempire After Dark, The Villain Era show. So be sure to get the live stream ticket for New York City. That is now available. Check out the link tree for all the ticket information. So let's get into what our friends over at Law and Crime had to say when it comes to the Diddy trial and the closing arguments that were happening.
This is Combs attorney Mark Ignifilo.
Sidebar, I did speed it up a little bit just so that we're able to get through it a little bit quicker.
The trial, from the evidence, what is it? It's personal use drugs. That's all it is. That and swingers, a lifestyle, but the prosecutors have charged one of the most serious statutes on the books. They call threesomes and drugs as RICO. How compelling of an argument is it that Sean Combs, he's got an interesting lifestyle. It's not one that a lot of people maybe on the jury would condone, but it's not illegal, and it's certainly not the type of lifestyle that you would charge a gang leader or a mob leader with.
Well, I said earlier, I think that the defenses would need to paint this prosecution of being overzealous, and they went above board, above and beyond and trying to say that Mr. Combs was
The other thing we have to keep in mind, although I've been listening and reading about the defense's closing arguments today, and they don't feel strong, but we have to keep in mind the defense's closing arguments don't have to be that strong. The weight of evidence doesn't have to be on the defense. All they need to do is turn one juror on their side. The prosecution, the weight of this is on them. The burden of proof is on them. When it comes to getting a unanimous decision, that is the only way that they're going to get guilty for Sean Diddy Combs is by getting every single juror, all 12 jurors, on their side.
Oddballs that his sexual deviant lifestyle equated to sex trafficking and racketeering. So I think that's what they're doing here. He's saying, look, the prosecution saying that because he had consensual sex with women in different states, that amounted to sex trafficking and this being racketeering. I think that's what the defense has to do. They need to say that the prosecution here has it out for Mr. Combs, and they're trying to convince this jury that just because he does these things consensually, that equates to this being a crime, one of the most serious crimes that's on the books, and his life is on the line if he's sentenced.
And then another line here, William, I'll have you react to. Mark Ignifilo says, Sean Combs is a self-made black entrepreneur. He has built real businesses that are so outstanding that others create partnerships with them. We heard that from Derek Ferguson. It is hard to be Sean Combs. How many witnesses said they were moved? And I think back to some, there was kind of just an interesting thing I kept picking up, even in some of the lesser known witnesses in this trial. George Kaplan was an assistant who said that he had to clean up after some of these freak-offs. But still, after all of that, you have people who would, at the end of the day, when the defense would cross-examine them, they would say they still had some sort of admiration or complicated relationship with Sean Combs. How do those non-sexual relationships factor into the argument the defense is trying to make?
Well, look, we all know that Mr. Combs is a self-made man. He's been very, very successful, not just in music, but in all these other businesses that he has. I mean, there's no way around that. And it's important for the defense to highlight that, right? Because one of the things you want to do in your closing argument, especially if your client doesn't testify, and especially if you don't call any witnesses on your client's behalf, is you want to humanize your client. And you want to remind the jury that this isn't just some guy off the street. This is an individual who has done very, very, very well in life. And I think that's what those witnesses were referring to. And it cuts both ways, because we also know that as part of the RICO, or I'm sorry, the sex trafficking, there is this idea of coercion and intimidation. So it does cut both ways. But I think it's incumbent upon defense counsel to do their best to humanize Sean Combs, especially in light of the prosecution's closing argument.
And we have to keep in mind, they're humanizing him. We talked about this. They didn't call any witnesses in their defense. Their defense literally was half a day. They didn't call any witnesses. Diddy said he was not going to take the stand. That is normal. A lot of times in these types of cases, if the defendant does not take the stand, although Diddy's lawyer, Mark Agnifilo, who I was actually surprised was doing the closing arguments. Again, I'm not familiar with Mark. Yes, he's represented some very questionable people. Usually that happens when you're a defense attorney. So I don't really know his presentation, but based off of us reading transcripts over these last few weeks, I didn't think that he would be the one to close, but he might be a strong closer.
Some good questions coming in from our chat. We really appreciate it. Keep them coming. We'll make sure that we'll have our panel answer them as we're live on the air following Sean Combs' defense team's closing arguments. This is from Steph Frank 1234. Aaliyah, could the jurors not be paying attention if they have already made their minds up?
This is something that we've talked about before. This is a lot. The jury instructions are very interesting. You want people to be able to pay attention. You want people to know what they're doing. Hence why the judge got rid of jury number 6, because he can't control that the rest of the jury will be paying attention or have the skills to make sure that they're following directions. But juror number 6 showed us that he did not. You can't tell us clearly where you live.
Yes, because we are humans and sometimes we tend to look off into space sometimes. I hope that they are not, because if they were, that means that they were not listening to all of the evidence from an unbiased standpoint, as a juror is supposed to do, right? The whole purpose of a jury is to be unbiased, to listen to all of the evidence that's presented from both sides and not make an opinion until all of the evidence has been presented. That said, this has been a case that has been very, very highly publicized. The famous 2016 Intercontinental video came out long before this trial, right? So it would be hard not to, from the human standpoint, not to have an idea of who you think Mr. Combs is based off of seeing that video, one way or another, right? Again, we hope the jury has not done that. We hope that they have listened to all the evidence, and then only after all the evidence has been considered and applied that the law to the fact that have been presented will they make an unbiased decision.
And Tyler, here's another question that I think would actually end up being probably debated in a law school class if this is a guilty verdict. Kelly B's 6578, if prostitution is legalized in the U.S., can they then appeal the charge of transporting across state lines to engage in prostitution if Sean Combs is found guilty of that?
So, great question. I do not think that under federal law, prostitution is going to be illegal in the U.S. I could see maybe a state like Nevada allowing brothels in certain areas, but I don't see any way in federal legislation that prostitution will be made legal. For example, marijuana is able to be consumed in some states recreationally, but still in federal law, it's still a crime to engage in recreational use of marijuana. So, therefore, I don't see it happening, and that would be some lofty.
That was an interesting question, but I never thought of it, and I'm glad that he's answering it.
More so of a plea for some pardon if he's prosecuted under a crime. I think that becomes legal, maybe in the state of New York or other places.
Yeah, and if we're dealing with a guilty verdict, the pardon conversation, I'm sure, will be coming hard and fast. Right after that, as far as on the news, here's some more updates coming in from these closing arguments. Quote, the assistants were moved by Sean Combs. It was like Harvard Business School. He pushed me hard. Did they always like him? No. Let's not even go there. Did they like him? No. But they loved him, even the ones who are suing him. Mia, I'm not going to call her Mia because that's not her name. I'm going to call her the witness who testified as Mia. Remember Derek Ferguson from the Bronx?
That would be a question that I would want to ask Kirsten. Because now they want to take away from the pseudonym Mia. What is the strategy there to not dehumanize, but I definitely think that's very specific why they're doing that.
He said, there were not many hiring people like me from the Bronx. There's something more to these businesses. Sometimes the real things in life are hard. No one remembers the easy days. These people grew. It was real. It was diversity. These days, DEI, Combs was doing it at 24. William, what's your...
Not DEI being brought up, but okay.
Reaction to some of the lines that we're hearing from and the approach that Diddy's team apparently is taking.
Again, it's an effort to humanize Combs. It's an effort to remind the jurors of everything that he's accomplished in his life. It may be an opportunity to reach out to some of the younger jurors and essentially say, this gentleman, this superstar, isn't, again, just some random criminal. And perhaps, just perhaps, the government is picking on him because of his success and because of his success as a black man. I mean, race does factor into these things. Race is something that has come up during the course of this trial. We had the issue.
And we know that was part of their legal angle. The defense was to say that this is just the Southern District of New York coming after a black man.
With a juror that was dismissed, and race is live. Race is a live issue. And every single thing that goes on in this courtroom is important to the jurors. And to point out, as the defense counsel did, that Sean was involved in DEI before DEI was a thing, that's reminding them of where Combs came from, what he's done, and what he's accomplished. And I think it's important to do that. Now, whether or not that holds sway at the end of the day is a different story entirely. But at this point, in the very beginning of defense counsel's closing argument, again, it's important to humanize who their client is and remind the jurors of everything he's done prior to being charged with these crimes.
Ali, another great question coming in from Benoit.
And mind you, us as a community, and I don't think the prosecution is going to do this, we could also talk about, yes, he came from nothing, and yes, he gave opportunities to people, but there are a lot of rumors, and there's a lot of history of Diddy stealing, allegedly, I'll say, from his artists. There is a trail of bad boy artists that don't like Diddy and feel like Diddy stole from them.
904. Your second question, we really appreciate you dropping those into the chat. If Diddy's found guilty and sentenced to 10 to 25 years, is there a chance he could be released before serving the full sentence?
Yes, there's always a chance that you can be released for good behavior, for time served, that he'll be credited for the amount of time that he's been in jail leading up to the trial. And there's always an opportunity for individuals to be released early. Yes, of course.
And the other option too, if he doesn't get convicted on the larger charges like RICO, which you face like life in jail, there's also the transportation of S workers, a charge that he's facing, that have less time, which I think is like 5 years, 5 to 10 years or something like that. Don't quote me on that. However, he's been in jail for some time now. He could walk off of that. I remember us talking about that early on in the case.
And then Tyler, Game of Tunes, 2947, with a question I frankly asked myself a couple times over the past 7 weeks. When does this trial end? I heard possibly today or Monday.
I think closing arguments are going to end today. The jury will start deliberating on Monday. And if I was a defense, I would like a longer deliberation period than a shorter deliberation period. I think the fact that they're going to take the weekend off and start deliberating on Monday could lead to there being a quicker deliberation, because these jurors, there's going to be no way they're going to go home and not think about the case at all. They may be thinking about some facts that came out during closing, and they'll finally be able to talk to each other as a group on Monday. But this case, I think, is going to be over possibly on Monday, Tuesday, maybe Wednesday at the latest. The longer deliberation, I think that means the
Here's what they get into in this video in regards to what does it mean if there's a short deliberation versus a long deliberation.
They're struggling to convict. If it's a quick deliberation, I think it means that they are quickly leaning with the prosecution.
And it's interesting, too, because we officially know, we learned this morning, that the jury will.
Hence why the prosecution wanted to make sure that these jury instructions were clear and easy. This is, again, pulling away some of those allegations, not dropping any charges, but pulling away some of those allegations, streamlining this to make it easier for the jury not to have too many questions or not to be like, did they prove that? No, kind of thing.
Which is what we were expecting, get the case on Monday, but it's a short week next week because the 4th of July is on Friday. William, how could that short week factor into whether or not we're here a couple weeks from now still going on? I mean, how long could this theoretically go once it goes to deliberations?
I mean, that's always the $64,000 question, right? We never know how long jurors are going to deliberate. They can deliberate until they have a verdict or until they reach out to the judge and say that they don't. I don't love the fact that it's a short week. As a defense attorney, I don't usually like jurors to get cases right before either a long weekend or a holiday, simply because you want jurors to be able to take the time and to go through everything.
Especially because, okay, this is like us at work. For those that work a corporate job, 9 to 5, a holiday is coming, it's Friday, and then that week feels like the longest week ever. So I get why defense attorneys are like, I don't want them to rush through this. They already have been on this case for weeks, and this is not an easy case. They've watched freak-off tapes. They've listened to testimony about abuse, things that they probably have never seen or heard before. Us just talking about and summarizing it is a lot. But can you imagine being in the court, taking all of this in? They're taking in more than anyone because they're actually seeing and hearing a lot of what the press and the general court are not hearing.
So I don't love the fact that it's going into the holiday week as a defense attorney. I think that jurors may, unfortunately, rush a little bit in order to not have to come back after the long holiday weekend. Realistically, I don't know that the jurors get the case on Monday. I think it's more likely they get it on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the jury instructions are going to be that quick. I think that today is almost entirely going to be made up of defense closing argument. And then, of course, don't forget the prosecution.
And I would have to agree with him in regards to this is a William Corum. He's a criminal defense attorney. Because there is the other part of this. Yes, the defense might wrap up today, but the prosecution has their opportunity for a rebuttal.
Has the opportunity to give a rebuttal argument. We know the prosecution is a little long-winded. I think their closing itself was 4 hours and 45 minutes yesterday. I mean, that's a long argument. So I think that Monday would be optimistic.
4 hours and 49 minutes, to be exact, was the prosecution's closing argument. And it was supposed to be around 4 hours.
For the jurors to get this case.
Before I get to a couple more of the questions that are coming in fast, which we appreciate, update again from the courtroom. Mark Agnifilo says, the prosecutors call his business racketeering. That's the fake trial. What happens? He gets arrested. They destroy his property. They have an SRT, special response team. They're clandestine. Can't follow with a camera. Rampant. They ran. His kids were there. And here, six or seven in the second row. So he's pointing to Sean Combs' kids. He has seven, believe me, six or seven of them who are there. And of course, he has a young daughter who's an infant. So kind of bringing the family into this. Tyler, first off, I get...
Hence why it's important that all of his family were there today, too.
Is it a stretch? Because when I think of RICO, I think of Al Capone, Whitey Bulger could have been probably charged with RICO, John Gotti, Sean Combs, you know, Bad Boy Records. I mean, this is the person who we grow up with. Is it a challenge for really the prosecution to link something that we all kind of consumed and loved in a lot of ways with people who are mob bosses?
It is a challenge. And this is, I believe, unprecedented for a RICO charge of this nature, especially with there just being one person at the top on this case. And that's Mr. Combs being charged with racketeering.
And it's also important. We've talked about this in our coverage that if he is convicted, this will be a legal precedent and could open up this to other individuals. This is why I think it's also important for us not to look at this, even no matter what we know about Sean Diddy Combs, we need to look at this from a, this could be you or me. Well, no, not you or me, but you get what I'm saying. It might not be the same details, but if they have not proven their case in he's convicted on something like this, that's we've never really seen anything like this before, it could open up an overreaching, dare I say, from the federal government when it comes to something like this, where individuals are being charged for RICO and they're like, wait a second, how is this RICO? So that's why when I look at a case like this, I'm like, well, I need the prosecution. If they really believe that this is what he did, they need to make sure that they prove it. Because I don't want this to open up to where now innocent people are being charged with RICO when it's not RICO and it's something else. That's why when we look at this, we have to remove Diddy from it all and think about the potential of what this could mean historically for the future. Because just because we might believe that Diddy is not innocent, he's an evil person, but did he commit RICO? That is the important detail here.
All by himself. And I think that's what the defense is showing here. They're showing the overwhelming power of the government with these special teams, how they brought this case and how they've charged him with racketeering when they're saying this is really just Mr. Combs having sex with people consensually and pushing his team members very hard as he's a successful person, globe-trotting across the world, doing business. That's what the defense is trying to show this jury. The question really is, does the jury believe the defense position of this case or they believe in the prosecution's position of this case? And we won't know that until there's a verdict. But I think the defense is doing a good job showing the power of the government and showing that they just went above and beyond and put a zero target on Mr. Combs' head and went all the way with racketeering that has a penalty of life in jail.
Yeah, it seems like just based off what our conversations were starting at 9.
And that's important too. When we talk about RICO, I don't think people are reminded that those are the serious charges here where you could end up in prison for life.
Clock this morning, the defense is taking that approach. We're going to take a quick break. Tyler Bailey, criminal defense attorney, civil rights attorney. It's been great to have you. I know you have to head out. Aaliyah Roberts, William Corbin.
We're going to move on from there because I do want to get into the summary of what our friends over at NBC News is talking about. Thank you to Law and Crime. Again, guys, you can watch that video at your own pace because, you know, we sped it up a little bit. But you can watch that on Law and Crime's YouTube channel. Again, I'll be citing my sources in the description. As always, that's what we do here on the channel. A reminder, don't forget to like this video. Don't forget to share this video. Don't forget to subscribe if you're not a subscriber. And also don't forget, we are still raising money for Pride Month. Pride Month ends in just a few days. So you still probably have, 3 days so we can reach our goal of $5,000. We already set a new record for our Pride Month fundraiser this year. Thank you to everyone that's donated. Thank you to our mods for getting everyone together and reminding everyone to donate. Thank you to everyone that has been sharing our videos for other people to donate as well. 100% of your donation goes to the organization. Thanks to YouTube Giving. Let's help the center keep their doors open. As you know, with this current administration, there are a lot of cutbacks in regards to what these agencies are getting in regards to federal funding. Let's help keep their doors open so that they can keep providing services to some of our most marginalized communities. As I've said before, the center, although they help a lot of the LGBT community, if you or me or anyone else showed up at their door, they're not turning anyone away. So donate today if you can. I appreciate it. We still only have a couple more days, and I think we can definitely reach $5,000 here for our Pride Month fundraiser. Again, thank you to everyone that's already donated. Let's get back to day 32 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. Again, don't forget, you can also get a full update in regards to our Diddy trial coverage here on our YouTube channel. We have a Diddy trial playlist, so be sure to check that out. Shout out to those of you that end up just saving all of our daily trial updates and you listen over the weekend. So shout out to all of you. Let's get into what NBC News is reporting in regards to today's defense, because I think these summaries are important, again, because we would be here for like hours and hours if we literally went through the transcript. But I like the fact that they're giving us a summary. And then more than likely, once the jury deliberates and they come to a verdict, we will go live. I think that will be important for us to go live and hear all of your reactions to what's been playing out when it comes to this court case and what this could mean for the future, or Diddy's future. All right. So according to NBC News, the defense gets to summarize its case today. They said defense lawyer Mark Agnifilo has said that he hopes to complete his closing arguments in about 3 hours. As a comparison, the government had expected to wrap it up, its summation, in 4 hours before Assistant U.S. Attorney Christy Slavik eventually took 4 hours and 49 minutes. Once the defense is through, U.S. District Court Judge Aaron Subramanian could have up to 2 hours of instructions for jurors before they can start discussing evidence. So this is why you saw the attorney said that I don't see them starting to deliberate come Monday, probably Tuesday. So they should set up the panel to begin its deliberations late this afternoon or fresh Monday morning. I'm thinking fresh Monday morning. The judge has really been good about the mental health and the physical health of the jury. He's been very good about making sure that we do not, what's the word, we do not tire them in regards to this. Already, it's a lot of information. And it doesn't benefit Diddy in having a fair trial where the jury is anticipating the weekend or anticipating a holiday. So they said this should set up the panel to begin its deliberations late this afternoon or fresh Monday morning. It looks like it will be Monday morning. Next week is a short one with the court not in session on July 4th. There's also been a lot of holidays in between. And then there was a juror that was and they had vertigo, so they had to cancel that particular day. So Mark Agnifilo will deliver closing arguments for the defense from 9 a.m. and it should last 3 hours. That will be followed by the government's rebuttal given by Maureen Comey, which should last an hour. And we've heard that Maureen Comey, she sort of has a very, very blank demeanor. Like, it doesn't seem like anything bothers her, which is perfect for a prosecutor, I think. Which should last about an hour. Her rebuttal should last about an hour. Finally, the judge will deliver the jury charge in regards to their instructions. The U.S. District Judge Aaron Subramanian gaveled court into session today in what figures to be the final pre-deliberation morning of this trial. Combs entered the courtroom, gave his family a wave, a heart signal, then a thumbs up. And as I told you before, from the footage I saw today, his daughters are in the court today. I saw Mona Abdi, who is a journalist covering this case. She's also an extra reporter, said that she was going to go in very early today because yesterday the court was full. And it's first come, first serve when it comes to the main courtroom. And she's been in the courtroom in you get a different experience when you're actually in the room. Agnifilo paced around the lectern and tested his microphone to see.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
See how far he could walk from it and still be heard by the court reporter. Okay, so they were testing the mic. A final push for Combs commences. Agnifilo began to address the jurors in a final push to convince them that Combs is not guilty of running a criminal enterprise aimed at satisfying his sexual desires. Agnifilo accused prosecutors of putting his client on trial for his lifestyle and not a real crime. It is a trial of a lifestyle. If you want to call it swingers, that's what it is. And that is what the evidence shows, he told jurors. The prosecutors have charged one of the most serious, complicated, and comprehensive statutes on the books. The defense lawyer called his client a highly successful businessman. Sean Combs has become something that is very, very hard to be, Agnifilo continued. He is a self-made, successful black entrepreneur. Agnifilo leaned heavily on the devotion of Combs' employees, who, even after testifying to violent or irrational behavior by their boss, said that they were still grateful to work for him. The attorney conceded that working for Combs was like drinking from a fire hose, but said that employees still appreciated the experience. Did they always like him? No way, Agnifilo said. But they loved him, even the ones who are suing him. Agnifilo mocked law enforcement for their raids on Combs' homes and making America, quote, safe from Astroglide. Combs' bedroom proclivities were on display all trial, but Agnifilo said the government didn't make its case to show his client to be a criminal kingpin. Way to go, fellas. You guys just do you, Agnifilo said. They took Astroglide and baby oil, and that is the evidence in this case. There is nothing about the businesses to make it a criminal case. And one of the things that we noted was the controversy or the conspiracy theories that something was in the Astroglide. If something was in the Astroglide or in the baby oil, I think that would have helped the prosecution's case, because then were these individuals doing this of their own consent? But we found out, according to Cassie's own testimony, there was nothing in the baby oil. Agnifilo said his side of the table didn't fight allegations that Combs battered his then-girlfriend, Cassie Ventura. We own the domestic violence. I hope you guys know, the attorney said. But Agnifilo urged jurors to remember the charges facing Combs. He did not do the things he's charged with, racketeering or S-trafficking, the attorney said. He didn't kidnap anyone or obstruct justice. He's going to fight to the death to defend himself against what he didn't do. I don't know if I can believe that he did not kidnap anyone. This is why it's important for the prosecution to understand what kidnapping is, very much like what Kirsten said in her text message to me, basing on, you see in the video, Cassie trying to leave from what we now know was a freak-off. She's trying to leave. We see Diddy battering her in that hotel hallway, dragging her back to a freak-off. She wanted to leave. They said he did not do the things that he's charged with, racketeering or S-trafficking. He didn't kidnap anyone or obstruct justice. He's going to fight to the death to defend himself against what he didn't do. That is a quote. Combs and Ventura were, quote, a great modern love story, Agnifilo said, despite the stomach-churning violence that marked so much of it. It's complicated, but they are truly in love with each other, and that is what defines their relationship, the lawyer said. It is based on love. Ventura eventually left the relationship because she always had the freedom to do so, according to Combs' defense. If racketeering conspiracy had an opposite, it would be their relationship, Agnifilo said. if racketeering conspiracy had an opposite, it would be their relationship. This is what he said. That's an exact quote. Again, this is what the defense has to do. They have to paint the picture that what he's being charged with is not what happened here in this relationship or relationships. Moments after conceding his client savagely beat Ventura, Agnifilos called her a gangster. That sounds a little racist, but okay. Despite all that, Ventura, hence why I said I'm surprised that we're not seeing Xavier Donaldson be the one do the closing argument. But again, Xavier might feel like he's not a strong closer. He's better doing cross-examination. I don't know. But okay. Despite all that Ventura suffered, Agnifilos said that she wasn't defenseless. He says, I'm not going to be judgy, but she played him good. And that is not something anyone can do, Agnifilos said. Ventura had a relationship with Kid Cudi and used a, quote, burner phone during her time with Combs, all showing that Cassie is like a gangster, according to Agnifilos. He's got to discredit Cassie. Agnifilos has been speaking for a little bit more than an hour now, and Combs appears to be fully engaged. The defendant was sitting up close to the defense table, unlike yesterday, because remember we reported to you that he was very far from the defense table, which, according to insiders that have been in the court, his demeanor was very different yesterday. This is the defendant was sitting up close to the defense table next to the attorneys Brian Steele and Alexander Shapiro. His energy and attention looked to be much higher than during yesterday's 5 hours of prosecution's closing arguments, according to NBC News. Combs denies he tossed a Molotov cocktail into Kid Cudi's Porsche, destroying it in 2012. Agnifilos insisted that if his client had a beef with the rapper Scott Mascuti, it would have led to a one-on-one brawl. Okay. Now, let's talk about this nonsense with the Porsche, Agnifilos said. There is no evidence he had anything to do with the Porsche. Nothing. I will say, based off of the testimony, I don't know if we could say that convinced the jury that Diddy had anything to do with it. But I could assume he did because he threatened it. But okay, but again, I don't know how that will land with the jury. So they continue. They said the defense said that the claims that Cassie Ventura was kidnapped and held in the London Hotel in Los Angeles are false. On May 14th, Ventura had testified about an incident in January of 2009 when Combs beat her after an event in Los Angeles in an SUV and stomped on her face. She's lucky to be alive, if we're going to be honest. When they got back to Combs' home and he saw her, what would he have done if he had really taken her life? He would have been in jail. Unless he maneuvered that in another way, I don't know. When they got back to Combs' home and he saw her face was bleeding and swollen, he had his security take her to the London Hotel in Los Angeles. She testified that she wanted to stay at Combs' home to recover, but wasn't allowed to and was taken to the hotel where she stayed for about a week. Combs' attorneys argued that she went to the hotel for her own good, as they didn't want anything in the press. The defense argued that it's not kidnapping when you want to go to the house of the guy you're charging with kidnapping. Well, you wouldn't allow her to be at your home, probably because your kids and things like that would see her. So you put her in a hotel. That's not where she wanted to be, though. But you can see how the defense is poking holes in that. Like, because now the jury's going to be like, but is that kidnapping? Is that kidnapping? Agnifilos' summation had gone for 94 minutes when the judge called for a 15-minute break. The defense had earlier said its closing argument should last about 3 hours. Lead prosecutor Maureen Comey complained to the judge about, from the government's point of view, improper arguments made by the defense. The defense at points made sarcastic comments about the charges against Combs. Agnifilos says, respectfully, I think I'm allowed to be sarcastic. I mean, is he? So before jurors re-entered the room, The judge told Agnifilo not to openly speculate about why the government chose to pursue the charges it did against Combs. "Mr. Agnifilo, for you, please don't do that again," the judge said. "It's grossly improper." That would be a question I would want. Kirsten, if you could note this for a future text message or conversation. I would want to understand his point of view, because at the end of the day, the defense should be able to close this, poke holes into the prosecution. But why would this be grossly improper from the judge's perspective? I get why it would be grossly improper, but from a legal perspective, isn't that what the defense should be doing? The defense attorney, Mark Agnifilo, attacked the testimony of Mia, a former assistant who worked for Combs, and said that he S8'd her. This is where love and money come together. Mia loved working with Sean Combs. She loved the work she did. Forced labor is when you want to be out there as soon as possible, he said. So he's now talking about the forced labor allegations. Agnifilo went back to an online post Mia made wishing Combs a happy 45th birthday and sharing admiring words. There was not any unwanted sexual contact between Sean Combs and Mia. It was platonic love and admiration. Instagram postings, wonderful pictures and slogans, and prosecutors said that was a part of her job. That is how she really felt, he said. Combs possessed drugs, but only for personal use and not for distribution in any criminal enterprise. That's where I feel like the prosecution didn't necessarily bring it home for me in regards to the drug use of it all. But we shall see in their rebuttal. Ventura considered Combs a drug addict with a preference for painkillers, ecstasy, and Xanax, Agnifilo said. Distribution as a part of a racketeering conspiracy, and there is no evidence of that, Agnifilo said. The defense argued that claims made by the prosecution don't constitute S trafficking. Rather, this was Combs and Cassie Ventura's personal sex life. Agnifilo called the charge the lowest hanging fruit. This is his girlfriend. There is no suggestion that he is making money from this. This is his personal life. They are swingers. This is their lifestyle. He said evidence shows that Ventura wanted to participate because this is how they are close. Your likes and their likes become one. And that is what love is, and that is what was going on with Cassie. In the defense's ongoing effort to paint Ventura as a tough woman who couldn't have been a victim of Combs, Agnifilo said that she had all the confidence to date the handsome Michael B. Jordan. I know Michael B. Jordan is probably somewhere like, how I get in this? And this is not the first time his name has been brought up. When she wasn't with Sean Combs, she was with Michael B. Jordan, the most handsome man in the world. She was not going to slow down, Agnifilo said. She is at a high level. She has sexual confidence. Good for her. She is not clutching her pearls. This was her lifestyle. The defense tried to minimize the infamous 2016 Los Angeles hotel beating of Ventura, implying it was an argument over Combs' cell phone. Agnifilo showed how at one point of footage, Ventura was carrying two bags in her left hand and something in her right hand while Combs was pursuing empty-handed. Moments later in footage, Combs has a phone in his right hand. Agnifilo's implication was that Combs had confronted Ventura to get his phone back from her. He confronted her by beating her and then seemingly dragging her back. Okay. Agnifilo disputed Cassie Ventura's claim that she was R'd by Combs in September of 2018 after they broke up, the attorney argued. He says, I suggest to you, maybe it didn't happen. Agnifilo cited a September 27th text where Cassie said, I had a lot of fun with you, thank you. And I told myself I didn't want anything to happen. While they were together, she got a FaceTime call from her current husband. The defense proposed that she lied to her current husband because she was caught ignoring his call and said that she was raped by Combs. I can see how they're poking holes into her testimony. Judge Subramanian sent the jurors out for lunch, asking them to return to the court before 1:45 p.m. Agnifilo had been arguing now for 2 hours and 45 minutes and probably has another hour to go, he said. Comey said her rebuttal will take about 90 minutes. Sumeranian said that he hopes to charge the jurors at about 4 p.m. and have them ready to deliberate on Monday morning. So court gets back in session and the jury will be charged first thing on Monday morning, the judge said. So he changed it. He originally, early in the day, before the lunch break, he said that he would charge them at 4 p.m. Now he's saying he'll do it Monday morning. So they probably will start to deliberate Tuesday, very much like. They said then they can start deliberations. So maybe they'll start deliberations late Monday, but I guess that will depend. But definitely, this does not benefit the defense, because now if we start deliberating on Tuesday, you only have Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But if they come back really quickly, that would be interesting. Combs shot homemade corn, and that really isn't a big deal, his lawyer said. The defense conceded that the defendant regularly shot footage of his girlfriends having sex with male S workers as he watched, and shot footage during these hotel nights or Wild King nights. He's not the only man in America making homemade corn, Agnifilo said. The attorney insisted Combs would never use the footage for blackmail. But isn't that what he did against Cassie's parents? I can't remember if there was actual text messages where Diddy said that. Or the text messages, I would have to go back. But the text messages didn't explicitly say that. But there was a transfer of $20,000 to Diddy, who then sent it back days later. Remember, also, the defense, the elephant brain is working. The defense also decided not to cross-examine Regina Ventura, Cassie's mom. As the clock struck about 2:12 p.m. Eastern, defense lawyer Agnifilo completed his third hour of argument on behalf of his client. The defense had earlier said it needed about 3 hours for a summation, so the estimate will end up short. Oh, okay. Agnifilo portrayed Combs' sex marathon, drug-fueled hotel nights, or freak-offs as pleasant experiences in his beautiful hotel rooms with great music. But this is their job, guys. I have to remind you, I know we're all going to roll our eyes, but this is what the defense has to do. He said, there's no way on this earth Combs was ever going to release videos of these sexual encounters. In a quote, Agnifilo says, looking at the videos, you heard from Jane, there is a rapport. Everyone is smiling. It is a sex party. They are eating food. Cassie is eating watermelon. They are listening to music. The two S workers called to testify said that there was a lot of talking and hanging out, he said. There is a nice quality to these evenings. Remember, we were just talking about how in the prosecution's closing arguments, they said they were putting on an act, hence the costumes, the wigs. Agnifilo said that in January 2024, Combs and Jane were not seeing each other. At some point, they were in Vegas having sex, and Anton, a corn star Jane reached out to for freak-offs, was there. She says, I showed my friends. It sounds like spring break, Agnifilo told jurors. It was the defense's effort to portray the freak-offs as consensual. Agnifilo further insinuated that Jane and Anton had a sexual relationship outside of the freak-offs with Combs, and Combs didn't know about it. Agnifilo hammered on, saying that there were holes in her testimony, and that on occasions when she got violent with Combs, it was likely because she was, quote, getting what she wanted and needed from a financial standpoint. She had previously testified that Combs paid her rent and was currently paying her rent. I don't think Jane's testimony was as strong as Cassie's, to be honest with you. And she was up there a lot longer than Cassie. She was there up there for 6 days. Cassie was up there for 4. Cassie probably would have been up there longer if she wasn't pregnant. Despite Combs' frequent hiring of men from S worker services, that shouldn't be viewed as a sexual act, his defense said. No one ever said, hi, I'm a male S worker, Agnifilo said. There was not evidence of that. When Combs asked a S worker agency for a discount based on all he'd spent on previous hires, the company pointed out he was paying for time, Agnifilo added. Well, because they can't at least definitely not admit to a crime via text. So we read through that and we're like, yeah, they can't admit that they're paying for sexual behavior. Evidence of firearms possession was introduced to do nothing more than smear Combs, his lawyer argued. You brought out a big, nasty, scary GUN to scare you for what purpose, Agnifilo said, to make you think he's a bad person. Agnifilo said that the government should have had a better accounting for which weapons were found if there were an important element of the case. That can't possibly be true. Was that them doing their best? He said. That can be reflected on how much you trust them. Okay. Agnifilo wrapped up his presentation imploring jurors to set his client free. In a quote, "You should feel courage to call it as you see it, and I'm asking you to summon the courage and do the right thing," he said. "I'm asking you to acquit Sean Combs of all the counts. He is not a racketeer. He sits there innocent, so return him to his family who has been waiting for him." And then I'm sure he probably turned to the family that's all there in attendance. Agnifilo spoke for 4 hours and 3 minutes compared to the assistant U.S. attorney, Christy Slavik, whose summation lasted 4 hours and 49 minutes. But remember, Agnifilo said that it would take him 3 hours. But I'm glad that he was up there for more than three hours because they had no witnesses. I will say, based off the summary, they did a good job in regards to poking continued doubt in the jury's mind. But again, the burden of proof is on the prosecution, and they have the last word in this case. So following this an afternoon break, the judge reminded the jurors that they're not to be concerned about who the prosecution has not charged in this case, because that comes up. In his defense closing, Agnifilo questioned why others were not targeted for prosecution other than Combs. So the judge is telling the jury, you should not be worried about that. When we talk about, a lot of us have been saying, why wasn't she charged? Would that have strengthened the prosecution's case? Maybe, maybe not. Why weren't bodyguards testifying or charged? So the judge says, following the afternoon break, Judge Submarini reminded jurors they're not to be concerned about who the prosecution has not charged in this case. In his defense closing, Agnifilo questioned why others were not targeted for prosecution other than Combs. The judge said arguing that Combs is the target of a selective prosecution was not appropriate. That would be something that I would want maybe further explanation from Kirsten. Kirsten, if you're seeing this, if you could take a note. If you could take a note, because that would be interesting. The defense offered nothing more than lies and excuse after excuse for Combs' inexcusable behavior, the lead prosecutor Comey said as she began her rebuttal closing arguments. Make no mistake, this trial was how, in Sean Combs' world, no was never an option, she told jurors. Sean Combs did not take no for an answer, not from employees and certainly not from his girlfriends. Comey mocked the defense for arguing that Combs' frequent hire of male S workers was just for their time and not at all related to sex work. It doesn't pass the laugh test. Common sense tells you that he did not pay them for their scintillating conversation, the lead prosecutor said in her rebuttal argument. It was for sex. So Comey mocked the defense for arguing Combs' frequent hire of male S workers. As I said before, she said it was for sex. She says, even if there was not a spoken or written agreement for sex, the intent was clear, according to Comey. What matters in the law is what was on Sean Combs' mind when they crossed state lines, she said. Sean Combs intended to pay them for sex when he transported them. When they collect their paycheck, they are getting paid for the work they have done. Again, I'm going to cite those two interviews that I did with Kirsten Brown because she talks about this. She talks about in the part two of our conversation, she talks about the rebuttal and how to drive this home with the jury. Capricorn Clark, a former aide to Combs, was taken against her will to confront Kid Cudi in what amounted to a kidnapping, Comey said. Remember, Capricorn Clark, I don't know if they're leaning away from what happened to Capricorn Clark when she was working for Diddy in the early years and she was brought to this empty office building and subjected to multiple lie detector tests for 5 days straight because they believed that she may have taken jewelry from Diddy. I would consider that kidnapping as well, but I'm not sure if they decided if that was one of the allegations that they decided to remove. But they're citing like that wasn't the only time. They're talking about the night with the whole Kid Cudi of it all. The prosecutor said that it was laughable to believe defense's assertions that she was there willingly to help with the break-in. Combs wanted to confront Kid Cudi with a G-Wen, according to the prosecution. Agnew Phillips said that Sean Combs was a hands and fist guy, sure, with his girlfriends. Oh. Okay, Maureen Comey. She says, I wonder if she reaches out to her dad when it comes to a case like this. I wouldn't be, for those that don't know, Maureen Comey is the daughter of the former FBI director. And he was also Southern District of New York? Yeah, I believe it was Southern District of New York. Go watch the Martha Stewart documentary because her dad is mentioned in it. It doesn't mention him in the best light. He doesn't have the best history, even as an FBI director. Agnew Phillips said that Sean Combs was a hands and fist guy. Sure, with his girlfriends. Oh, because what she's saying is that, he was definitely would fight you if you were a woman. Come on now, Maureen. Because if you see Maureen Comey, you would never think that she would talk this slick talk. Very like plain. I'm sorry, Maureen. This is no shade. But she's very like plain. Again, based on what people have said about her, you don't see a lot of emotion from her. Homegirl said, Agnew Phillips said that Sean Combs was a hands and fist guy in regards to fighting with Kid Cudi. Sure, with his girlfriends. Come on. I had to read it again. Okay. The music mogul ran a criminal enterprise with help from plenty of employees who helped him to do nearly everything in daily life, Comey said. The prosecutor mocked Combs' inability to execute a host of daily tasks, arguing that was indicative of his need to use his, quote, inner circle to nearly everything in his life. This is a guy who can't get his own water bottle or plug in his phone charger, she said. He is the general, not a foot soldier or lieutenant. The two former girlfriends and former assistants said that they were SA'd by Combs, despite the defense's assertions that sex was consensual, according to the government. All three women made it clear they did not want to submit to acts pushed onto them by Combs, Comey said. These three women had no reason to lie, Comey said. The former assistant, Mia, testified truthfully about SA she endured from Combs, the prosecutor said. Mia is not some trained actor putting on a performance, Comey said. No one is handing out Tonys or Oscars for performances in this courtroom. She was here to tell you what happened. She also said that she planned on never talking about the essay that she experienced, allegedly due to Sean Combs. The former girlfriend, Jane, didn't sue Combs, so she too had no incentive to lie. So she said the former girlfriend, Jane, didn't sue Combs, so she too had no incentive to lie. However, because we're not playing sides here, her lifestyle, including her attorney, were still being paid by Combs, including her rent. If she was looking for a payday, where is the lawsuit? Comey said. There is none because she was not trying to copy Cassie. Because when she read the lawsuit from Cassie, if anything, that would have said to her, I could sue him too. Because remember, she said that this was her story when she read Cassie's lawsuit. Combs' former girlfriends had no reason to lie or share a common desire to have sex with male S workers, the prosecution said. These freak-offs and hotel nights were all allegedly the brainchild of one person. His, Combs' desire for these nights was predictable and insatiable, Comey said. Emphasis on insatiable, because literally they talked about 3 to 4 days. I can't imagine not a woman, not a man. Because remember, Diddy wasn't the one performing. it was the woman that was performing and the male S worker for 3 to 4 days. She urged jurors to take these women at their word. The defense makes all kinds of claims of why they were lying, Comey said. Remember, these women have no reason to lie. By the time Combs beat up Ventura during the infamous 2016 hotel incident, she was at a stage of his psyche where all demands needed to be met, or else, the prosecution said. The defendant took this to an extreme point. By the time that he got to the Intercontinental, he was so far past the line, he couldn't even see it. The commonality these women shared was their shared abuse by one man, Comey said. The cycle of abuse made them feel trapped because they were trauma bonded. So she's reminding us what Dr. Hughes testified earlier on in this case. As Comey hammered away at Combs, the defendant paid close attention to the prosecutor's rebuttal argument. So Diddy's very much engaged. He sat close to the defense table with his hands crossed on his lap. A terrifying assault that Jane said that she suffered at the hands of Combs last year was an example of being beaten into submission, the prosecution said. The then-girlfriend didn't want to have sex with another hired male S worker and let Combs know, the prosecutor said. Jane may have started that fight, but he finished it with a vengeance, Comey said. He has literally beat her into submission. Sean Combs won that fight, and he made her pay by performing with Anton, and she had no reason to lie about that. Because remember, when that incident happened, she said that she was the one who physically hit him first, but then it went on to this huge blow up between them to the point where she says that she ended up leaving the home for a couple hours, going back, he was still there, and then she alleges that she was forced to sleep, to partake in another hotel night, a freak off with these male S workers. I think it's important for me to note some of what you may have forgotten. The clock has run out for Combs, a prosecutor said, as she urged jurors to finally hold the music mogul accountable. The defendant thought that he was above the law for the past 20 years, Comey told jurors. He got away with crime after crime without consequences. So I'm going to keep my fourth wall in. We froze. It is what it is. At least the audio is still here. Just for a reminder, for those that have been following this case since the beginning, there was a day that I was doing one of my summaries for you, and I recorded like an hour and 15 minutes, and then I looked and I was like, does that say muted? And I had read transcripts and things like that as well. So I froze, but it's okay. There's still audio. Maybe I'll put something over that particular part, but it wasn't for that long. I hope not. We'll see. But let's continue in regards to this. The clock has run out for Sean Combs, a prosecutor said, as she urged jurors to finally hold the music mogul accountable. The defendant thought that he was above the law for the past 20 years, Comey told jurors. He got away with crime after crime without consequences. The court could finally be the venue where Combs might meet his match, the prosecutor said. For 20 years, he got away with his crimes. That ends in this courtroom. The defendant is not God. He is a person, and in this courtroom, he stands equal before the law. Overwhelming evidence proves that. It is time to find him guilty, and it is time to hold him accountable. Comey spoke to jurors for 77 minutes. Judge sent the jury home and asked them to return before 9 a.m. on Monday. So that's when he will charge the jury, meaning giving them the instructions for how they will come to a verdict. We shall see if they will start deliberating on Monday as well. That would be great for everyone. I will keep you posted in regards to this case. You never know if you're not following us when we might go live. Definitely when it comes to the verdict, we will have to go live. I will have to make sure that I am free next week when it comes to the verdict. Hopefully we will have a verdict by next week before July 4th. I know this has been a grueling case for a lot of people. Shout out again to the content creators, the bloggers, the journalists, the lawyers. Shout out to Inner City Press, Law and Crime. Shout out to Mona Abdi, who's been one of the journalists that we've covered here in regards to some of our coverage. Shout out to all of you. Shout out to all of you. Shout out to our King's Guards, our channel members, our subscribers. We appreciate you all being here, and I appreciate all the love and uplifting that you guys have given me in covering this case over the last several weeks. It had interrupted my normal birthday trip. I will make up for it come the fall. But as you know, we have a tour. We are coming to Philadelphia on July 10th. I will be talking about this trial. I will be talking about Real Housewives of Miami and Atlanta. I will be talking about some other stuff. You will also be dropping tea. But Philadelphia, this week only, the sale ends Sunday. If you've got your tickets or you know someone in Philadelphia that might like our content or like our live show, or you're nearby, if you're in New York, if you're in South Jersey, go get your tickets this week. This is the best time, if you're going to get your tickets, to get your tickets. So get your tickets this week for our night of hot topics and more. Tea being spilled. What happens in Philadelphia is not what's going to happen in Atlanta when we come there on August 5th, or what will happen when we come to DC on August 22nd, or what will happen when we have our show in New York City on September 12th. Meet and greets will be available for all of the shows. Go get your tickets today. We will also, for the New York City show, have a live stream option exclusively for that. So if I haven't come to your city, won't be come to your city, or if you're in another country, this is where you'll be able to experience the Kempire After Dark, the villain era live experience for yourself. Be sure to check out the description for more details on that and everything Kempire, including my skincare routine, cameo, if you have a birthday, anniversary, whatever it may be. If you want to get merch, head on over to the description for more details. Again, this has been an interesting case. Hopefully what we will do in between now and next week is speak with Kirsten Brown in regards to this case so that we can unpack what we've been talking about all week. Thank you to Kirsten Brown for giving us a prosecutor, but also an attorney's perspective on this case. I think after those two conversations that we've had, if you haven't seen them, they are cited in the description of this video. I think our audience, our community, have been able to have a better understanding of what has been playing out and what we can expect when it comes to the next few days with this case. Guys, again, if you haven't liked the video already, be sure to like the video. If you haven't subscribed, be sure to subscribe. If you're listening to the audio version of this, don't forget to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Again, thank you to all of you for being here. Thank you to everyone that's been sharing our content. If you're a new subscriber, be sure to let us know. And make sure you stay locked. We're talking about this case today. We could be talking about another case tomorrow or something else in pop culture, because we talk about everything that's trending in pop culture. Happy Pride. Thank you to everyone that's already donated to our Pride Month fundraiser. We're almost to our $5,000 goal. If you haven't donated, or someone that's got coin, have them donate. You can check any of our videos for the donation button. Thank you again to everyone that's donated, and I appreciate everyone's support. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. I will see you on Monday. Well, on Monday when it comes to Diddy, but you're always getting content here. Be sure to subscribe, and we'll talk more about this on next week. Thank you guys so much for watching and for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. As always, you can hear Kempire on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. More information can be found on KempireRadio.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.